Hi, and welcome to an edition of Interviews with the Masters, brought to you by the OutdoorInsiders.com, your number one spot for inside information and quality gear. Today we have on the phone with us a good friend of mine, the man behind one of the best TV shows out there, a guy who really knows how to be in front of the camera and be behind the camera, Trevin Stulfus of Outback Outdoors. How you doing, Trev?
I'm doing great. I thought this was interview with the workers. I didn't realize it was interview with the masters. I don't know if I fit that bill.
Interview with the blue-collar guy.
Interview with the guy that just grinds away and grinds away. Just like you, we have been doing this a long time, and sometimes you wonder if you're getting anywhere.
Yeah, it feels like I spin my wheels a bunch. But it's all fun, you know. And if it wasn't, we probably wouldn't be doing it, so, because we definitely don't get rich off of it.
Oh, for sure. There's definitely a passion that is not rewarded monetarily. I think we feed our souls more than we do our pocketbooks.
Oh, that's for sure. That's for sure. Well, can you tell us a little bit about you and what you do?
Sure. I was born and raised at an early age. Insert laughter there. Just kidding. No, I was born in New Mexico. Raised in a family that had a lot of hunting, outdoor, I want to say experiences. My actual dad did not hunt. We did a lot of stuff outdoors, but he didn't hunt. But my grandpa and my uncles and my cousins, you know, they all did. And when my dad saw my love, which you got to meet my dad.
Yes. Awesome guy.
My love for the outdoors, he fostered that by making sure I had the opportunity to go fish, to go hunt with my relatives that really fostered and encouraged that for me. Mm-hmm. So in a way, even though he didn't hunt, he did support it, and I'm forever grateful for him for that. And so I was raised in New Mexico. Did that as I got older. Did a little bit of guiding. Flash forward, I've done a lot of things in my life, from a police officer to a professional bull rider to a blasting contractor. I think I've scrubbed toilets, and I think I've worn a suit and tie to work.
Yeah.
As far as all the various things I've done in my life, and then when I was about 26 years old, I married my beautiful wife Sandy, who I've been married to almost 18 years. And right. and then shortly after that, we moved to Colorado, and that's really where my outdoor industry dream or journey started. I think is where that the beginning of what is soon what was soon to be Outback Outdoors started.
Okay.
I've always had a love for writing. I had a great sixth grade teacher who taught me how to write. And so when I moved to Colorado, I started writing about some of my adventures. And I enjoyed it, you know, growing up in New Mexico, hunting public land. I wrote a lot about how to research and scout for elk and mule deer and stuff like that on public land. And one thing led to another, and I was introduced to a gentleman named Mike Eastman, who has a small Western publication that – I was fortunate enough to be offered a job, and I was their first research editor. I think that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And I got to get into the industry. That was really my stepping stone into the industry. I think even before that, though, I had already had a camera, and I was actually already filming my own hunts. But
you were also on the Best of the West, right?
Yeah, but that was after Eastman's. That was a little bit after Eastman's. That was kind of when I stepped away from Eastman's. I worked for Eastman's for a couple years, and they wanted to move everybody out to the Wyoming home office, and I didn't want to move from Colorado, and it just worked out that I stepped away from that and went kind of on my own, went independent, and that's when I got with some of the best of the West guys, and you know, they do the long range shooting stuff, and I'm a bow hunter, so they kind of brought me in with a little bit of flavor, and we did that for a little bit. It wasn't the greatest fit because they do sell the long range shooting systems, and when I'm doing bow hunts, they're not selling any scopes or rifles or anything like that. But that was an interesting experience, a great opportunity, met some neat people.
Jim's
and,
a good
yeah, so I got a chance to do that for a little bit. And then I worked at J.T. Harden and Ryan Klesko with Hardcore Hunting TV. I worked with them a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2008, I started, me and Adam Wells, or I should say Adam Wells and I,
mm-hmm.
started Outback.
Don't worry about it. I'm from Brooklyn. We don't pay attention to grammar.
Yeah. I'm an outdoor writer. You know, I mean, you're supposed to know how to speak, right? When you know how to write.
I am too, but I write like I talk.
Yeah, well,
I write like
so,
I speak.
Anyway, so we got a chance to go on a couple of hunts, Adam Wells and I, and we just really wanted to do something different. And I had already had this fascination with capturing these adventures. And that's kind of how Outback Outdoors was started. And 2008 is when we started it. And we were online, primarily online at the time. I think we were a little bit early. Actually, I sat with a gentleman named Bill Winkie, who has Midwest Whitetails, and he was starting
yep.
the deal. I was starting mine, and we brainstormed a bunch. And, of course, he had quite a few more industry leaders, sponsors, backing what he was doing. And I still to this day, when October rolls around, September October, I'm always checking in on
yeah.
his blogs and stuff like that. It's great information, but that's kind of the short version of OO and how it came to be.
Nice. Well, the reason we have you on today, and the reason why I'm considering you a master, is because you've had a lot of experience on and off camera. And the way the Interviews with the Masters works, we get a bunch of questions that get sent to us either on my social media platforms or through the various websites that I'm associated with, the Outdoor Insiders, the Hunting Channel. And I take these questions and I start putting them aside. I put them in, in categories. And when I get enough of the same question asked and I get enough of the questions in a certain category, I find the guy who's best suited to answer them. So all my questions for you today have to do with filming the hunt, so to speak. They're all in that genre. Literally bombarded daily. You know, what camera should I buy? How do I get into filming? How do I get into, so I figured we'd address that today and pick your brain a little bit.
Well, yeah, and I think everyone's different, but I can sure give you insight to what the mistakes I've made, and there's plenty of them.
Yeah.
Hopefully, you can look at yourself as an individual, if this is something you want to do, and hopefully I can either cut some corners or maybe even show you the light as to the reality of what it's really like to do this. It's a tough business. It's really tough. So
no, it is. It's getting tougher and tougher and tougher. But that's a story for another day. All right, so I'm going to dive into these questions. So my first question is, what do you feel the 3, 4, or 5 most important things for someone to start working on if they want to produce good hunting videos or short films? It's kind of a vague.
That's a great question. I think... In order for you to produce a good film, Can I take a second and diversify between a hunting video and a film?
Of course.
I want to make sure people understand those are not the same thing. When you're making a hunting video, you're usually sponsored by XYZ manufacturers or, you know, the product companies. And your job is literally to help them sell products. Okay? So in order for people to watch it, you can't have an infomercial because people won't watch it. Okay?
Right.
So you got to have entertainment, you got to be able to educate people, and then you got to inform them about the products that you're using and why you use them and why you think they're the best. So a hunting video is much more commercialized than a film. Okay? And there's cool things about each. Let's go back to what I remember as my entry into hunting videos. They were Mike Eastman. Even before that was Gordon Eastman, his dad. You had some of those Primos. I'll be honest. Some of my first videos were the Primos elk hunting videos. Heck, I still have them in VHS. I don't watch them anymore, but they're on my shelf, and I will never sell those. Because I look up there, and I remember watching Will Primos and Jimmy Primos and those guys. I remember watching those guys the first their elk, the Truth Elk Hunting one, and I think it took them 3 years, if memory serves me right, 3 years to make that one hunting video. And they went, and you could just see the passion in their eyes, and they were definitely trying to sell something. There's no doubt about it. They were trying to sell calls, but it was definitely a hunting video. There wasn't a lot of how do we get here? What are we looking for? It was a lot of encounter, 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 you know, whack 'em and stack 'em type of style.
Right.
And I think we all devoured that. I think that's what we wanted to see because it was so different. And then we went through, and there was no hunting television at this time. The only hunting television was on TNN. And I believe you had the old school guys like Realtree, of course, had a deal early on.
Right.
But it wasn't Realtree Road Trips. I mean, this is way before that. You're talking Hank Parker.
Yeah.
You know, those guys.
Yeah, Babe Winkleman.
Yeah. That's all you had.
Peter Fiducia had the Woods and Water series.
Yeah.
There's quite a bit of guys out there. I mean, so I got into it in 2004, and I used to watch on, I'm trying to remember what it was. It was probably ESPN, I think ESPN2. I would say probably started watching them in the early 90s.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
But that's all we had. There was no hunting channel. I mean, I'm old enough to where I remember. Do you remember the Fall of the Men's Network? I mean, that's how old I am. I mean, I remember when it was the men's channel and the men's, all these networks literally folded because they had horrible business models, and people wanted to. It's just like today, you know, if you've got some money, you can have a hunting show. Okay.
Right.
Now that doesn't mean you're going to pick up sponsors, but you have $100,000. You can have a hunting show for a year, okay? Now, if you have another $100,000, you could have a hunting show for 2 years.
So,
people think, and this is something else I want to throw out there to the audience, is that if you think you're going to take $100,000 and you're going to throw that in a pot and you're going to go and you're going to produce a hunting show and then next year your show is going to be fully funded, you are gravely mistaken.
Okay? Nope.
And I thought that. I did. I thought if I could just get that first season under my belt, and then I know I can get it funded fully for the next year. And I was wrong. Now, again, we're still talking about hunting videos that have transitioned to TV. Still a hunting video. Still the primary thing on this little product that we're presenting to the Sportsman's Channel or Outdoor Channel or Pursuit, whatever it's at, mm-hmm. know, whatever televised, or maybe it's Carbon TV, maybe it's the Hunting Channel, maybe it is aired on the web. It doesn't matter. You're still, your whole thing is, I have a partnership with XYZ, you know, like Cabela's is one of our main sponsors. My job is to support Cabela's in a way that people walk in the door and purchase their products. That's my job.
Yep.
Okay? As an executive producer. Now, I'm preaching to the choir. I know you know this.
But yeah. Everybody else doesn't understand this.
Right. What people.
And I want to throw something in here. So.
Yeah, go ahead.
All that you just said right now, you know what everybody's major complaint about outdoor TV is?
Too many
commercials. They're tired of being sold stuff.
Right. Sure. And I understand
that. And those things go away. You don't have Hunting TV if those things aren't there. If there aren't sponsors, Hunting TV goes away.
Okay, I think there's a balance
because
nobody
wants to pay.
Right.
Pay per use. I mean,
right.
Sure, you've done okay on, you know, VHX and stuff like that where people pay to see an episode, but it's not, at least nobody that I know is making enough money off of that to say, hey, I'm going to go dump, you know, $60,000-$70,000 just to produce this show for a year to make
right.
$10,000 on VHX.
Right. Here's stepping back. I think there is a balance. Now, I'm trying to give enough of a dose of reality pill that people, if they, I don't want people not to follow their dreams. I want every aspiring producer to go out and try and make a show or try and make a film or whatever they want to do, capture, and I want them to share their adventures. But I also want them to have realistic expectations. So, following that same line of logic, we go on, and now we've gone, and now we've done our first year. And you know what I found out, and actually I found this out my first year, was I had a lot of major sponsors that I thought I could, after one year, they'd be willing to go with me. They'd be excited to be part of what I wanted to do. And you know what they'd tell me? Trev, when you've done 3 years, then come back and talk to me. So I'm going, what? 3 years? So now I've got 100. So now I'm into this thing for, you know, let's say it's 10% increase every year on the production side, 10% increase on my airtime costs. Okay, now I'm into this 100. So now I've just dumped another $250,000 into this before I can come back and talk to you about a $30,000, $40,000 commercial spot. The math doesn't add up. The math doesn't add up. So, now, let me pull back the reins. I don't want to squash the dream, but the reality is, you end up, what we did is we started on the web. We got partnerships. People ask me all the time. I know they ask you this too. How do I get sponsors? Okay, so I'm going to take a second and talk about that because, again, this is under the videos. I'll talk about films in a second, but this is still under the videos or the hunting shows.
Right.
A producer gets sponsored or a group of people get sponsored when a producer is able to show that product, that company's product, in a light that's going to help it sell more. So the question I answer to everybody who's emails me that 5 times a week, how do I get sponsored? I know you get at least as many, if not more, of questions that exact same, how do I get sponsored, is this.
All the time.
what would a company benefit from giving you, A, a free what's a who's it or a bow or broadheads or whatever, or money? What would they benefit? Okay, and think of it this way. Well, I'm going to show their – no. This company has options. They have established shows. They have print media. They have Google. They, you know, now these options are even wider than they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
For them to take XYZ amount of dollars and invest it in their advertising campaign, why would they choose you? That's the question you have to ask yourself as a producer to make a hunting video, to make a hunting show. So if you can go and sit down across the table from, you know, whoever it is Mr. Managing Executive for, or Advertising Manager for that company, for Hoyt or Matthews or Bowtech or, you know, whoever it might be, Realtree, Mossy Oak, you know, Cabela, these big companies, they've heard it all. What are you going to say? What are you going to show them that's going to say, ah, we want to partner with you? If you can answer that question, you're one step closer to that partnership that's going to help you break even or, in the future, hopefully make money.
Right.
So now let's move on. So that's a hunting video. So now you have to come up with 10, 15, 20 of these companies that are going to turn around and invest in you, and you're going to turn around and produce a product that's going to help them capitalize on your audience to promote their product. So you also now have to say, how am I going to do that? Okay, and that's where you get hunting videos versus films. A film gives you the total freedom to go out and film an adventure, and it doesn't matter your sponsor placements, your taglines, your stuff like that. You're just literally filming a adventure with the whole idea is to make someone bring them there. Okay? It's a different style. I actually try and film our TV show that way, although I do have to make sure I get my product placements. I do have to make sure. I'm one of those guys that I do not do cheesy, I grabbed my Hoyt bow and I took my gold tip arrow with my, you know, wasp broadhead. You know, I don't do that when I talk because I don't talk like that normally. So I don't do that in the show. But I make that very clear up front. And a lot of companies don't want that anymore. They actually don't want that. They realize that turns people off. So with a film, though, if you take the film aspect, I think you're a little cheaper because most likely you're not having to pay airtime, too. Maybe you're going to release it purely digital. But your whole idea is to create an adventure and share it that people can, number one, relate to, and number two, feel as if they're there.
Right.
Where a hunting show, again, I try in our hunting show, I try and create that film-like thing, but I still got these other things I'm having to hit, these other markers I'm having to hit because I do have partners and sponsors that I'm trying to produce an adventure, a film-like adventure, a cinematic excitement, you know, that I can do in 22 minutes. A film, you don't have a time limit unless you're trying to submit the film to a film festival or something. You might have a time limit there. But really, if it takes you 7 minutes to tell it, no big deal. Or if it takes you 22 minutes to do it, 26 minutes, who cares? Because it's all about the film.
Right.
So I think those are two things that people need to see. Hey, where do I want to go with this? Do I want to go and get my toe wet and fund it myself and buy my own first equipment and all of this stuff? Or do I want to go full barrel and try and do a TV show? If you're going to do that, you're probably going to have to do something first to get your foot in the door. You're going to have to prove yourself in some regards. So
it's like going to knock on a stranger's door and say, hey, I'm me. Give me some money.
Right. Well, the only way you're going to be able to go and sit down with a major sponsor and get sponsored is if someone like Rock House or Red Rooster or you know, some big production house, True Sight Media, somebody is producing it and selling it for you.
Right.
But here's the difference. You're also paying them a pretty penny.
Right.
So, you know, you're paying them $10,000 to $15,000 per episode to do that. And so you still got to have a bankroll. So those are kind of some of – and I hate to say that because I don't want to turn anybody off. If somebody says, man, I really want to film my hunts, I say, God bless you. Go get a GoPro. Get a small camera and try it. There's a lot of people that just want to see do-it-yourself, as-you-do-it footage. But here's what I want to stop and warn you. Don't miss out on the hunting because you're trying to film. Now,
Right.
In my situation, filming comes first. You've hunted with me. The mm-hmm. camera is always first. You see how
I wanted to strangle you, actually.
I know, because
the IMAX is right there. Kill it.
No, the camera's not ready.
Screw the camera.
Camera's always first. Now, if you just want to see what you can get, remember that and go hunt. Go hunt. Enjoy your hunt. Get what you can get. That's fine. If you want to run camera and you want to make sure you capture it, get a buddy whose only job is to run camera. And here's why. If you don't, you'll get your buddy who's a hunter too. And when the you-know-what hits the fan, he reverts back to hunter, you revert back to hunter, and the camera's still in your bag or turned off or whatever. So I don't tell people to give up hunting if they want to try and film. I tell them to try and film, but remember what you're there to do. Hunting comes first.
Mm-hmm.
If you're there to film, then you're going to have somebody. You're going to work through somehow and find somebody who's going to come in there and is going to film for you, and filming will come first for them. You know, and then you can hunt, and then it's a real release. But it's a learning process. I'll tell you what, you see the production that we do. It's crazy, and I would have never thought we got to this level, but I also know what I'm trying to portray, what my finished product is. So I know the shots I need, I know the time lapses, I know the B-roll, I know all of that has to happen, and we've just been able to build a wonderful team around us that I can go and I can take two guys and maybe have one guy over my shoulder, but then I have another guy, and he's getting B-roll, and he's getting time lapses. And when we come back in the evening and we do media management, we're like, man, we shot, you know, XYZ gigs, or maybe even, a terabyte.
Right.
But it's wonderful stuff. And we're not just shooting. We're not just hitting record. Every time we hit record, there's a purpose.
Right.
So, yeah. So
right.
I guess to answer your question, I can't answer your question. This is what I mean. That's a lot of information.
Well, yeah, it's a lot of information. Gives people food for thought and how they can start with what you just said. It gives them a place to examine their life, examine what their goals are, and try to put a plan together for that.
Right, right, for sure. And please, I hope I don't come across that filming, if you can't film your hunt, you're not worth it. No. Man, there's so many times I wish I could put cameras away. I miss the purity of just picking up my bow and going in the woods. And
I do it once a year.
I
force myself once a year to leave the camera at home, and I go hunt once a year.
Right, right. Just to connect. So,
yeah.
But for you guys that get the bug, you'll know what I'm talking about. I find it weird now to go out, and I do the same thing, John. I make myself go hunt by myself one time, and I catch myself every time, even pulling my iPhone out to video mm-hmm. or to take a picture of something, because it's, to me, part of the whole experience, the adventure. I get more satisfaction out of sharing it than if I just kept it to myself.
Yeah, no. Yeah. All right, I'm going to move on to the next question.
All right.
So this pertains more to films, and you were already kind of talking about that, touched on filmmaking a little bit. You and I, you know, we know this. We know what the most important part of filmmaking is, but I've never been able to, like, help anybody learn it, and that's, like, telling the story. How does somebody perfect, or how do you get better at telling the story? What are like the key components or a guideline or a layout of you know?
Wow, that's a great question, John.
Do you have a game plan when you go into film a hunt? I mean, it's reality TV, and the hunt's going to play out the way the hunt's going to play out. But do you have?
I do. I have a structure. Okay, I guess it's like building a house. I have the structural idea, but I'm not sure what the inside walls are going to look like. Have you ever sat around a campfire, maybe with some guys you don't know?
Mm-hmm.
There's just one guy there, and he talks most of the time, and when he talks, or maybe he doesn't talk a lot at all, but when he does, he just captures your imagination, and every story he tells, you are on the edge of your seat. It's either he's funny, adventurous, whatever it might be. So I think telling a story, I think some people are just better at it than others. Now, that wasn't your question. That's just my opinion. Your
right.
question was, how do you get better at it, or how do you explain to somebody how to tell a story? I say, write out a story. So there's always 5 senses. The 1 sense that we always throw away is smell, because you'll never, and it's probably a good thing, because I smell like a goat sometimes when I'm out hunting. But but you want to capture all those senses. Just like when I write a story, an article, I remember the first time I fell in love with writing, the instructions given to my teacher was, I want you to write a full page on your favorite food. Well, my favorite food was a hamburger. And by the time I was done writing, explaining to the reader what that hamburger looked, smelt, sounded, you know, what all my senses were, my mouth was salivating. Okay? So that's the same thing in a story. When I'm out and I'm hunting, I'm constantly looking around, and I know you do this too. Oh, that bird's cool. Oh, look at that rock formation. Oh, but what we tend to do is we just move on. Okay? Oh, crud, I just stepped on a cactus. Oh, wow, ouch. Right? And we pull the cactus out of our foot and we move on. Well, that's part of the experience. So telling a story comes in and taking that person there. So that means touch, sense of smell, well, you can't really do sense of smell, ice, what does it feel like? What's the temperature? What's it smell like that you can relate? And sometimes you can do that in color. Audio is something that I will admit, is my weakest. It's always going to be our weakest.
It's mine. It's everybody's weakest. Very tough to get good at audio out there, especially when you deal with and everything else.
We always say this. You know, you can tell the big boys from the junior guys by their audio.
Yeah.
Because, good audio is king. You can have decent video, but if you have crap audio, it's crap. You can have great audio and not so good video, and it can be phenomenal. You can make it look amazing.
Right.
So when it comes to telling a story, that's just part of it. So that's, for me, it's all about breaking it down. And what we do is, of course, we bring people in, and when we train them, I'm getting these guys to look for that rock formation. And, of course, boom, there you have it. And then to be able to, if I'm walking past a cactus and stub my toe or whatever, just I want to show the rawness and the reality of what this hunt exudes for me and for the animal and all of that. There's so much more, and I used to think this is how you do it. You go out, you shoot the animal, and then you get your B-roll.
Fly,
and that is so wrong. People make that mistake so much, and here's why. Because everything is redone. I will not reconstruct unless I have to and it's vital to the story. I will not reconstruct or remake anything because it looks like crap.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen a guy who's coming up and he's sneaking up on his buck, then you see his feet, okay, now his feet's walking, and the next thing you see is he walks by the cameraman sneaking up on his buck. Well, you know the cameraman wasn't out in front of him when he was sneaking up on that buck. You know it's fake. You know it's remade. And then the next thing you know, he's sighting down his rifle or his bow, whatever, and he's coming to full draw, and the cameraman's out in front of it.
Yeah.
So for us, I don't like that. We're not good enough actors to recreate stuff. Or at least I'm not.
You know what I do, though, to get that shot often? I mean, I use GoPros a lot, or I have a real small camera, I'll throw the tripod out in front of me to get that shot, that, you know, front-facing shot. I agree with you on recreating certain things, but I do like, just because it helps people understand the story and, like, a little bit better sometimes when you can see the guy shooting. Sometimes you do have to refilm that.
I totally agree. I have two GoPros that I run all the time. I have them hooked up to a battery, so I'm not changing individual batteries out, and they point back at me from my tree stand, and it's real time. But what I'm saying, though, is I'm not taking my main big camera. I mean, you can tell they're GoPros. They're definitely – and what is a GoPro? A GoPro is a POV. It's a personal point-of-view camera, right? And I agree with you. In ground blinds, I'm the same way. I have two GoPros, one usually pointing behind me going out the front, although you're not going to really be able to see much, but you can see us moving around, and then one coming back to get the draw. Or I have one on my bow when I'm coming back and getting the draw. I'm not saying those. I'm just talking about the whole idea where it's exact. Because you could tell the difference between a GoPro shot, a DSLR, a video camera. You could tell the difference in those cameras. I mean, it's very simple to tell the difference. And so when you come back and you got a guy who sneaking in that last – anyway, cheesy recreates, I hate them. So we try and fulfill all our B-roll, all our apprehension shots, all, you know, leading up, but they're real time. And we're just shooting all the time. So we go back, and where people only hit record on the exciting parts, well, we've recorded, you know, 10 times the amount of footage, and yeah, it makes it harder to go through, but we have such great, you know, raw clay to mold this masterpiece because we can tell the whole story. I mean, a small expression on a face or, you know, whatever it might be can tell the story, especially like when you miss. It's hard to recreate the facial expression or the surprise, maybe, you know, when you have a 20-yard chip shot and you totally missed the buck. I mean, it's hard to go back and recreate that facial expression because, you know, you just can tell. So, again, that's my style. I'm not knocking anybody who does it different. I just don't like it. I don't think it's genuine. And I think the audience really appreciates feeling as if they're looking over your shoulder. Now, the other thing that I do, I'm not scared to show my primary cameraman. You will see our camera guys all the time. And in the old school way was you never showed a cameraman because you wanted your viewer to be the cameraman. You know, you wanted them to feel like they're – and that's bullcrap. Our viewers are way smarter than that. Our viewers understand that we're out there with one or two guys trying to bring this adventure to light. So I don't mind showing – like when I'm belly crawling after a mule deer across, you know, these canyons or draws or whatever, trying to get it within range – and most of my – I'm a little bitty guy. Most of my camera guys are pretty big. Of course, you're going to see this big old guy with a camera behind me. Well, I have to get into position within bow range, not just with me, but with this guy too. So it makes it that much tougher. But I want to show that. I want to show that wide angle of here's the buck, here's Trevin, you know, here's little Trevin and Tanner or Dustin or, who, you know, whoever, Lane, whoever's the camera guy that's with me at the time. Garrett, you know, and so that's my thing. How do you tell the story? That's how you tell the story. You don't go back and try and figure out how the story tells. As you build this house, the story tells itself, but you have to make sure you get the footage so that you can take it back, put it in a nice presentation, and share it, and they get it. They understand the hardships. They understand the difficulties, and they can absorb it.
I like how you equated it to the senses. That's a good way of putting it. I guess what I always tell people is that I try to get them to feel whatever it is that I'm going through. Feel the emotion, feel the pain, feel the stress, the anxiety, mm-hmm. whatever. Feel the rain coming down, feel the snow, you know, and also that they're there, that they kind of get lost in it. Like, because I always, For me, a good movie is that when I go to the movie theater, I forget about everything else that's going on in my life for, you know, an hour and 30 minutes of that movie or whatever.
Right.
I think that's, if you and of course, every story is different. So the components to building that, you know, that's going to come about with whatever it is that you're trying to accomplish. But getting all the footage while it's happening, while it's all unfolding, and those the senses, like you said, that's a good way. It's an easier way for, I think, people to understand, to have them feel, have them smell, have them touch, have them whatever, you
right.
know, each thing.
Well, and then you can even take it a step further and say, music. Music can elevate a piece. Music can take a piece. If you really need to show that emotion, you can take the footage and all of that stuff, and that music rams it home. See, now you got me talking about what is my real heart, and that's storytelling. And I could sit here and literally talk about this for hours because I am so passionate about telling stories. Have you ever seen No Country for Old Men?
Yes.
Did you see that movie? That's kind of, you know, that South Texas border, the mm-hmm. Mexican cartel, drugs, all. Okay, I grew up in some of that country over there. And but if you'll notice, there's not one piece of music in that whole movie. There's not the only music in the movie is the background music of a jukebox when they're in a bar. Okay, it's the only music in the whole movie. See, ambient noise can fill and push a storyline into a direction. So there's so many ways. You've got music that can actually help reveal or bring about an emotion, a sense, or no music, ambient. But it's got to be good audio. It can't be crackly,
right,
windy, and crappy. It's got to be crystal clear. You know, the idea of the old cowboy. You know, and we know this, all of us, especially as boys growing up in the West. You know, it's that step on the plank board with the spur jingling of the old gunslinger. Clink,
mm-hmm.
clink,
yeah.
clink. That tells a story in and of itself. And then you put behind there some, you know, some of that spaghetti Western music. Now you're really, you know, the combination of those two, or just one of them by themselves, can really tell a story. So anyway, I'm geeking out here because.
No, but I hear where you're going with it. I mean,
yeah.
So a lot of times, okay, well, we'll take an elk hunt because that's a perfect opportunity for really good ambient. You're in between a bunch of bugling bulls and cows going off everywhere. If you have really good audio, then, you know, people feel like they're in there. They can feel like it's what's going on. Otherwise, you have to cover it up with music because you don't really hear anything but yourself breathing or whatever, or your cowman.
Exactly.
Right.
Well, and we were caught at, we were actually challenged on that season five. You know, for our first year on Sportsman's Channel, we had some good friends of ours actually come to us and go, "Man, dude, you guys are missing out." And we're like, "What are you talking about?" They said, "Why don't you just let it play? Just let it play. Let us listen to the bugle. You don't have to come in with that music." And it was like the light bulb went on. You know what? We don't, and we partner with some great musicians. We try and always, as much as we can, we try and always find independent artists, you know, who we can help their career and push their music, but also it, you know, it fits with what, I'll watch a scene and I can hear the music in my head. Okay.
Right.
That's how I work. A lot of times I'll hear a song and I already go, "Oh, I can see what fits this song," or vice versa. So, with that being said, though, I think it's important to understand that there was a time when we were just, "Oh, this is cool music. Here, let's put this in. Let's force it in." And I think that can be a mistake. I think that, so there's a balance there. And you know, my tastes might not be what your tastes are, but as long as we can get it in the middle there where people are getting, they're grasping what we're trying to portray. When
mm-hmm.
we're trying to portray the hardship of a hunt, we don't want light, music that's real happy-go-lucky. No, we
right.
want that music that tries to match the mood. But then with these film festivals and all this stuff coming out, I think the pendulum's even swung too far to the dramatic, to the over-dramatic. And then now we go out there and we're trying to make this over-dramatization of what does it isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, for us to be out hunting and doing what we love and then yet we're about to cry, wait a minute, hold on. Where's our priorities here? You know, so there's a mixture. Sometimes I look at some of the films, especially, and this is more film-oriented, that some of these guys are trying to over-dramatize what we should be embracing. It's okay to be disappointed, and it's okay for that emotional roller coaster ride, but let's not ride that too much. You don't need a box of tissues to go watch a hunting film. Okay?
No.
So
no,
that's my own opinion.
All right. So, speaking of filmmakers, what would you suggest that amateur filmmakers focus their efforts on? Is that, you know, building their brand, building their style? You know, because a lot of these guys, they're not just doing it. I mean, everybody does it because I hope everybody's doing it because they love to produce films. You know, Chris Dennett and I were actually just having a conversation when he was on my podcast about this. You can't get into this because you just want to be able to make money in hunting. Basically what I'm saying is you got to love filming your hunts just as much as you love hunting. Otherwise, you'll never be successful.
I think you have to be passionate about sharing an adventure more than you like hunting. You have to be passionate about the film process. Now, I don't worry too much anymore about the fact that I tell people, well, you know, you can't just be about being the next, you know, Cameron Haynes or, you know, the next Michael Waddell. It can't be about that. I don't worry because those people will weed themselves out. I've seen it time and time again. I've seen the guys that decide they're going to go, they're going to buy a camera, and they're going to, you know, one gentleman even started a website, said he had a DVD. He had a DVD coming next summer. He just bought his camera. He did not have 1 ounce of experience filming a hunt, and he's already trying to pre-sell this DVD he's going to come out with. Guess what? That gentleman lasted one hunt, and he put that camera up, and he did the wise thing, and actually, he's a good friend of mine, and he just laughs about it now. But he says, I hate this. I want to hunt. This is not what I'm passionate about. He realized it early. Some people, it takes a little while, and that's what you got to figure out. I almost quit at one juncture in 2011 because I dislocated my shoulder so bad and I couldn't shoot my bow anymore or for a while. And I had major nerve damage in my right hand. And I wasn't sure if I would ever be able to shoot a bow again. And I was so discouraged. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me because it made me step back and re-challenge myself. Why am I doing this? And what I came out of that with was, because I love to tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So,
all right, so let's say they're just like you and me. They enjoy the thing, but they want to be able to take it to the next level. What should a guy be working on? Like I
would say, don't put out crap.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't put out crap. Don't put out substandard stuff. Wait. Partner up, find people of like mind. Don't do it yourself, okay? Partner up with people who are like-minded, who want to do the same thing because it takes more than one. As we all know, you can't do this yourself. And you might go through 3 or 4 partners, but once you find those guys that you can work with, and then don't settle for mediocrity. Don't settle for, well, this is good enough. And you know what? I did. You did. We all did when we started.
Oh, yeah.
And
still do sometimes.
Our first piece, our first couple of hunting videos, we'll never, ever like. Well, I still don't like any of my stuff. I never am satisfied. But what I'm trying to say is don't If you know at the point that you're in, that exact point that you're in, you don't think it's good, don't release it just to have something to release. Don't do it. Wait till you can get it to a position to where it's better. Okay, with that being said, that's building up who you are as a producer. And then you have to decide, what do you want to do? Do you want to make films for yourself? Do you want to make films for other people? Because what will happen is you'll go one of two routes. You'll make a name for yourself, and then next thing you know, you'll never hunt again, and all you'll do is film other people. Okay? So you have to decide early on, is that where you want to go? If it's not where you want to go, then you need to make a few changes. You need to say, no, I'm not doing that. I want to make my own films, but I want to hunt. Okay? So mm-hmm. I know some guys that got burned out on that too. They were great filmmakers, but their passion was hunting. It wasn't filmmaking. And so they wanted to do their own things, and so the next thing you know, they burn themselves out, and they leave the camera behind and say, screw it, I'm just going to go hunt. That's what I love.
Right. So no, I know a lot of guys that got in and said they want to film and so on and so forth, and then they realize it's not really that they want to film. They want to be in front of the camera. They want to be the guy with the bow in the hand. I mean, it takes a lot for you to be the camera guy.
It takes more to be a camera guy. You know, and I filmed Cameron Haynes, and I filmed Guy Eastman. That's where I cut my teeth on. And I wasn't a very good cameraman, I'll be honest. I'm not a very good cameraman now. But what I do know is I've aligned myself with guys, and I have a vision in my little pea brain of what I want it to look like, and these guys know how to make it happen.
Right.
That's the difference, okay? So I go out, and I do my little thing, and these guys, we've powwowed, and we've trained, and we have the equipment that will allow us to make it look like this. That's the other thing. If you want a cinematic feel, don't go buy a video camera. Don't do it. Right. Go buy a DSLR or even, you know, maybe a Sony, like one of the mirrorless DSLRs now that's out, like an A7S1 or A7S2 or whatever. You know, what's up? But you have to be able to, if that's the look you want, then don't go buy a video camera because it's easier to run.
Right.
I mean, I have a lot of guys that say, well, Nate Simmons actually came up to me once. Nate produces Western Hunter for with Chris and those guys, and Nate just shakes his head because they use a DSLR in their B-roll, but they don't hunt with it. We hunt with DSLRs. We don't use any video cameras. And he's like, how do you do that? And I say, well, the first car you ever drove was a standard. Okay, and you were 8 years old on the farm like me. I learned to drive a standard out in the hay field, because I would drive the truck while they were picking up hay. Well, I could drive an automatic really easy after that once I learned to drive a standard. But if you only learn to drive an automatic and then I put you in a vehicle that had a clutch and you had to drive a standard, you'd be lost. Well, all my guys, they learn on a standard.
Yep.
So you hand them a DSLR. They know cameras well enough they can look and find the gain or the ISO or whatever it is called, depending upon what it is. And, where's the f-stop? How do I adjust the f-stop? Where's my aperture? You know, all of these different functions, they're all the same on a camera. And we just run our cameras on all manual. So they just got to go and find that. And pretty soon, within 10 minutes, they can run a camera most of the time. Now, there's still some getting to know a camera, that I think
or
is very important. Yeah. So, yeah. But the whole idea is these guys can – it's like Tanner getting some of that footage from the Ibex hunt that you and I were on together. Mm-hmm. You know, he can grab his focus and zoom in and grab his focus quicker than a guy with a automatic zoom. And and his focus is much clearer than the guy who's got an automatic focus set on his camera, because if there's any brush in the way or whatever, it focuses on the wrong thing. And he's boom, boom, boom. So I say that that's really important too. Make sure that you're using the equipment for what you want. What do you want the end product to look like? Okay, and then you need to make sure that you're using equipment that can do that.
All right. Well, that actually kind of leads me into my last question that I have here, because this question gets asked to me all the time. Basically, What would you say is a must for a guy to own, or better yet, give me what you would consider a good starter package, camera-wise and equipment-wise, and then tell me, or tell us what it is that you use. You know, what you think. Give us the junior guy, and then the major leaguer.
Okay. Okay. You know, there's not a huge difference from what we use and what we used to use, okay? We're Canon. We run Canon. Now, Canon's got to have to step up. Sony has made some major, major improvements. And in my opinion, the only reason we haven't stepped up fully to Sony, we do have some Sony cameras. We have an FS7. We actually have two FS700s. Mm-hmm. And we have the A7S. One, I believe. I'd have to look. Anyway, so we have made some transitions into that, but we buy all Canon Prime Series lenses because you can switch those around. All right? But what I would say, let's say the starter. If somebody was to come to me and they say, hey, I like your style. I like the cinematic look. Okay? How can I get that in a cheap no, let me change that. We don't believe in cheap. In an inexpensive budget. Okay? And the most inexpensive way, I would say this. I would say buy a Canon 60, and that's the 60D, okay? It's mm-hmm. a cropped sensor, okay? But it's still got, at least it's got a DSLR sensor in it. And I would buy some type of, I think there's some lenses out there, like kit lenses that are, like a 70 to 300 that you can get pretty cheap, okay? They're not the L series. I would buy like a 24 to 105 and maybe buy like a 51. I think we have a 1.2, but that's, I think, a couple, 1,200
yeah,
$1,500 bucks. Maybe a 1.4. Maybe that's $400 or $500 bucks, right? A 50 fixed 1.4. That's kind of that medium. So you get a couple lenses like that. You get your lens that you can go out there. And now this is for bow hunting. If you're going to be doing some rifle hunting, you're going to need to get out there and reach even further with the DSLR.
Spotting scope with DSLR. That's what
okay,
I say.
Okay, there you go. There's some great ideas there. Heck, I've seen some footage with a spotting scope and a freaking iPhone that looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
But
well, that's what I use. Yeah, most of the time when you're watching me film from distance, I'm using not even my spotting scope. I use my 15x56, and I use the iPhone with the outdoors.
Yeah. Right. So I think that there's some inexpensive ways you can do that. But here's the key. Don't forget a GoPro is always good to have.
Yeah.
There's, you know, some of these secondary cameras. Now, one of the things I like about the 60D is it has a lot. It doesn't have the exact same features, but it has all of the same features in basics. ISO, the way you set your ISO, the knobs might be in a different configuration, but if you can run a 60D, that's the 60D, then you can run any Canon camera. Heck, you could probably run any camera because it's again, the same. You just kind of find the buttons. And then what we run, so that's kind of your, let's say, your medium kit, your starter kit, if you want to try and run the same style we run. Now, audio is important. So I would suggest for that starter package, like an H4N Zoom, where you're running cordless mics, and then you're also running, like, Rode shotguns off of your cameras themselves for your ambient, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Don't try and capture your audio for talking, stuff like that, without a cordless mic, without a, you know,
a lapel-type
mic. Because unless your day is completely, perfectly still, you're just going to get too much ambient noise, even birds chirping and stuff like that, which is cool to have that for a background. But when you're listening to an interview or you're wanting to hear what John Stallone is whispering to you at this juncture, you know, as he's crawling up in the heat of the moment, you need to have good audio. So I throw that out there. Now, what do we run? Okay, we have changed a little bit over time. We do run the Zoom some, but we've actually switched up to running what we call a Beach Tech. It's a DXA SLR Ultra. It mounts under our 6Ds. Now, this is the difference between a 60D and a 6D. The 6D is a full-frame camera. It's not as great a photo camera as a 5D Mark III is.
Mm-hmm.
But for video, it's got some really good, it's full frame. We've got some great ability, especially with some of these L-series prime lenses, to get that low light. Not as much as the new Sonys. You could film before shooting light. But we're still able to capture our audio crisp and clear. We run those on a format where we actually have a follow focus on a 70 to 200 L-series lens. That's our primary lens that we run.
Okay.
So we can grab our focus quickly. And for all you guys that I'm talking over your head, please forgive me. But I would be more than happy, if you want to shoot me an email or whatever, I would be more than happy to take a picture of what we use, and I'll text it to you or email it to you. And I consider what we run, it's not a trade secret. Because we're going to, probably by the time I send you this, we're probably working on setting up a whole new rig that we're going to run for the next hunt, you know, and trying something new.
Right.
But I will help anybody out who has questions, because I'm not the equipment guru. That's Dustin. I'm a step down from him. So I'm just telling you what I know, I know that works. And we're already pushing the limits onto something else. But I'm telling you what we use right now that I'm very confident with, that we've used for the past year, and that it remains pretty tried and true. So we have our audio there, and then we're running different lenses, 24 to 105. We usually try and have two DSLRs, like say if we're whitetail hunting, well, you'll have your 70 to 200 on your 6D up on your tree arm.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is you can't do an interview with that because you're right up in the guy's nostrils. So
right.
we'll end up having like another 6D, again, 6D, not 60D,
right.
But we'll have another one set up with like a 24 to 105 hanging on a hook that's on like a monopod, and we'll grab that and turn around and boom, set that baby up, and then we can run our interviews or capture our B-roll or, you know, whatever we want to do with that second camera. So.
Cool.
Yeah, well,
I have actually filmed hunts with my iPhone. And I actually just released a coos deer hunt with the CEO of the Outdoor Insiders, Craig Knowles. I just released that episode. So you guys go take a look at that episode. And that whole episode was filmed on my iPhone 6S. Cameras matter. They do. But if you don't know how to operate them, it doesn't matter how good of the equipment you have. Because I have equipment. I have a couple cameras that act a lot like DSLRs, have a lot of the, you know, three-ring focus or, you know, aperture rings and all that other stuff that you can have that manual ability to mess with ISO and all that stuff where it's not a completely automatic deal. And I have DSLRs, but I don't know how to run them. I don't know how to run them really well. So I don't know all the ins and outs with us is what I'm getting at. So if
my guys
who film for me do, but I know what I want things to look like, and I know how to tell the story. At least I think I do. Mm-hmm. And if you work on telling a story and showing people, and really, you don't have to have a super expensive camera. It's basically what I'm getting at. If a guy like me can film a whole hunt on an iPhone, it's not the first time I've done it, because this is actually the second time I had problems with batteries or something like that where they were failing me out in the field. And I said, screw it, leave the camera. I got the iPhone, let's go. You know, because I'm a hunter first and a filmmaker second. So I'm not going to miss an opportunity on scoring whatever it is that I'm after, filling a tag for the camera.
Right.
That's where you and I differ a lot. But,
yeah, and my thought to that is, yeah, in a pinch that works. But, you know, I just think there's – you unfortunately, you limit yourself so much to what you can do.
Oh, yeah, of course.
The look that you want. So, yeah. But
I'm saying for a guy who's trying to get into it and wants to, you know, get his feet wet a little bit and try it, see what you can do with your phone. See what you can do with, you know, a handy cam or whatever. And then once you've produced one or two films and he's like, oh, you know what? I'm pretty good at this. Let me invest the money. Because all those lenses that he was talking about, they're not cheap. You know?
No, no, they're not.
You get a good 200-millimeter lens is like $3,000, you know?
I mean,
but I do have a – there is a good camera out there right now that Sony makes. It is the RX10 Mark III.
Yep.
It's got a 24-600. It's a fixed – you can't change the lens, but it's a 24-600, so it's a giant zoom. You got a lot of flexibility there. It's a mirrorless camera, mm-hmm. but it's a 1-inch sensor, so it's got a really big sensor for a mirrorless camera. And it's an f2.4.
Which is amazing. Which, for
right.
you guys that don't understand what an f-stop is, the f-stop, if you could imagine your eyeball, okay, the iris of your eyeball, that's an f-stop. And what it does is it allows for light to come into the lens. So imagine a large f-stop, like if you were running your camera at f14, let's just say, it's going to look like your eyeball is really big, right?
Right.
Well, actually, no, I'm telling you.
Oh, the other way around.
I'm telling you the opposite. Excuse me. Pardon me. So it's going to look like your eyeball is really tiny. Like, because if you turn the light on, if you watch your iris, when you turn the light on, you walk into a dark bathroom, go to the window, or go to the mirror. Don't be looking out the window in the bathroom, okay? go to the mirror, and you flip the light on. What happens to your eyeball? It goes, the little black iris gets really, really tiny, right? And then if you turn it off, and if you could still see, then all of a sudden your iris gets really big because it's trying to gather as much light. So at F, what did you say, it was 2.4? That's really pretty good. You're talking about it's when you're running at 2.4, it's going to make your focal length smaller, meaning shorter, but you're going to capture a lot more light early. So that's a pretty dang good. I mean, now, is that – what is – that's got to be F. 2.4 at like 70, right, or whatever its lowest. I'm sure it's not 2.4, it's 600.
I gotta check.
Sure, but that's still pretty good. I mean, some of the cameras
I want to say it,
back in the day.
Yeah, I mean it's crazy like how versatile that camera is.
Well, and
it's got slow mo, and slow mo operates
good.
Just like the FS700. You hit the trigger after the.
Okay, so it's that end trigger which you can yep. you literally allow it. It actually buffers, and then see we're geeking out here, John. Look at this.
Yeah, sorry, but that's a really good camera that you could pick up for under $1,500, and you have the ease of running a a video camera, and still have all the functions of.
A DSLR,
and still be able to take awesome photos after.
Right.
You can, you know, you can Wi-Fi to your phone. Everybody always asks me, how do you post all those cool pictures? Because I Wi-Fi those to my phone, and I put them up on Instagram, you know, after I play with them a little bit. But the pictures are taken with a good mirrorless camera.
I do think that there's a couple of things that really come into play with a camera like that and then maybe a 60D to offset it. And the reason that would be kind of perfect is because, first of all, you could run that 60D. You could run that as your as basically running like your time lapse. Because I think time lapse is a lost art. But
mm-hmm.
if you're telling a story, there's a time lapse is a great way to show in a creative way the movement of time without saying, the next morning, you know, in text.
Yeah.
And also to get a feel of the country. Like when we were in New Mexico hunting ibex together, I mean, the sunsets, the sunrises were just so amazing. Well, that's part of what you want to show. That's part of the imagery you want to show, and we were able to do that. You know, we're running time lapse. All of us. I think we came out of there with 54 time lapses.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and so being able to run that camera, like that video camera, along with a 60D, I think you'd really be positioned well, because then you could have some of your main B-roll shots and stuff like that with that more of a cinematic, low f-stop type of shorter focal length.
Using the RX as your running gun, and using the 60D as your setup shots.
Yeah. Here's the bottom line. You already said it. I'm going to reiterate it. There's no bad camera.
Right.
Now, there is bad storytelling. Okay? There's no bad camera. Okay? So it's only a tool. And you know what? I can go and drive a motorcycle and have a lot of fun pooping and hollering and driving it around, and then I can hand it over to a professional, and they can make that motorcycle do things I could only dream of.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
But that's not that motorcycle is just as good with him or me. It's just the user, and that's where we're at. I would encourage people. YouTube has a plethora of information. There's a couple of guys to follow on YouTube that you can, and you'll find them. I don't even need to tell you who they are. Just go on there, and they will teach you more about how to run cinematic shots, what does what, issues, new stuff. Dustin Etheridge, who has probably forgotten more about cameras than I'll ever know, he's my main producer for Outback Outdoors, started Clear Fork Collective, is his production company. That dude learned 95-98% of what he knows off of YouTube. But he studied, and then he went out and he practiced, and he brought it in, and he edited it, and nothing that we release goes out without him putting the final touches on it. So that's my two cents. I want to encourage everybody to pick up a freaking camera and capture your experience, whether it's your daughter's birthday party or a hunt. It's all the same. There's a story there. You got to think about what are the main characters. What's the threads? And again, we're getting into something a little bit more that I could talk for hours on. But tell the story. You've got a lot of different storylines within the main storyline. And how do you communicate that so that your viewer is not tired, you know, they're not wet, they're not cold, they're not out of breath, but they feel like they are. They feel like they should be, and they can identify with you when you are. And they can almost be, and they can capture the adrenaline, or they can feel the adrenaline of what you have, but they're not wet, they're not cold, and they're not tired. So, you know, you've portrayed those emotions, those feelings, through a two-dimensional screen.
Mm-hmm.
That's powerful.
Absolutely. All right, man. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to answer these questions. Where can our listeners find out more about you?
You know, the best thing for us, honestly, websites are, I need to revamp our website. It's a piece of crap. So you can check it out and see what a piece of crap it is. But check us out on Facebook and Instagram. We do some Twitter. Twitter's not that big. But Instagram and Facebook, we love to interact with people. Don't be scared. I have my own Facebook account also. But Outback Outdoors, we're pretty quick about getting back. If you have questions or comments or whatever, check us out on those social media platforms. And then, of course, Sportsman's Channel 4th and 1st quarter, we'll be coming back on first week of October on Sportsman's Channel on Friday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. So that's 8 p.m. Mountain, and that would be, 7 p.m. Pacific. So it's a pretty good time slot for Friday night full draw on Sportsman's Channel, Outback Outdoors. And we're on the 4th and 1st quarters.
Sweet.
Oh, you can also hear our older stuff is on Carbon TV for right now.
And the Hunting Channel Online.
And the Hunting Channel Online. And, there's some other different things out there. We don't want to forsake, take our older stuff and handicap it or kidnap it so that you have to completely pay to see it. But on the flip side, we also are trying to make a you know, make enough money here to where we can buy new equipment, that we can, you know, pay our guys a decent wage. So, you know, we got to try and make some money somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. All right, man. Well, I appreciate you taking the time and letting us pick your brain. And I probably won't see you until what, January? You guys gonna come out?
Yeah. Well, I've got that coos hunt in New Mexico, and I know Baronio was talking about coming down and hunting coos deer with you in Arizona at some time. I think all of that's kind of up in the air right now. But you know, we're pretty flexible, and I know that you and I have talked about that. But I drew that 27 in New Mexico this year.
That's awesome.
It's a pretty, yeah, it's a pretty good unit for coos deer for archery. So I'm excited about that. You got me hooked on. Well, you rekindled the Ibex flame for me, and then I think you whet my appetite for coos deer so much, and so I kind of blame you a little bit.
Wow, that's all right. It's a good thing to be addicted to. A lot of things there could be a lot worse.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, man. Well, thanks, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, God bless. Talk to you later.